And now, Move the Sticks with Daniel Jeremiah and Bucky Brooks.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Move the Sticks. DJ Bucky back with you. Buck, what's up, man?
No, man, it's all good. Getting ready for end of the year, New Year's, big bowl games on Friday. It's fun watching my team get absolutely thrashed right now by South Carolina and the Duke's Mayo Bowl. We'll see if they turn it around.
Jeez. What a... Yeah. Have you, by the way, last night, I don't know why, but I found myself, I haven't watched any bowl games yet, even including my alma mater who had lost and got destroyed. Mm-hmm. But last night I cozied up to that Oregon-Oklahoma game and I ended up watching that whole thing. I was watching some tape and I had it on the background and then eventually I just kind of shut the tape off and then ended up just kind of enjoying that game. Did you watch any of that game last night?
Yeah, I watched Oklahoma-Oregon because I wanted to see what Bob Stoops is going to be. It looked like the old man could just go back there and
it's fine.
Roll out the W's. I will say this. Maybe Oregon was dejected after the crystal ball thing, and they kind of limped to the finish the way they performed in the Pac-12 championship game and then also getting beat by Utah earlier, a few weeks earlier at the end of the regular season. They didn't look like the same squad. And then Oklahoma looked like they were on 10. I don't know what he did over the course of their bowl practices, but they looked like the faster – fresher and the team that executed the best, they were on fire.
Yeah, no doubt. What's your take on the young quarterback there? Were you around Caleb Williams at all with any of the Elite 11?
I don't,
was that during the pandemic stuff?
Like, it might have been during the pandemic stuff, but I will say this: every time I watched him, he's real impressive, man. Like, he's just so cool and easy.
He's got a little Mahomes to him. Like, I know everybody likes to compare people to Mahomes, but just like body type wise, he kind of reminds me of Mahomes. His ability to kind of drift in the pocket and still get a lot on the football reminds me a little bit of Mahomes as well.
Yeah, no, he's a talented player. And it's funny because I had a chance to check out a handful of bowl games and got a chance to see the quarterbacks. You talk about Caleb Williams. I got a chance to look at Tua's younger brother. Yeah. They absolutely just took Virginia Tech to the shit. He's dropping dime after dime after dime. I think yesterday was the first day that it really kind of locked in. I watched a handful of games. I watched Clemson and Iowa State.
I saw the end of that game. What a heartbreaker for Iowa State, man.
Poor Brock Purdy, man. He just can't get a break.
That was brutal.
He can't get a break. But I will say, it's funny when you can have a bad year like Clemson and still win 10 or 11 games. That is crazy. It's ridiculous. Like, we threw them out, said they're done, and they still finished with 10-plus wins on the season. They look running back. I had to ask my dad. I was like, hey, man, where'd the little running back come from?
Yeah.
And evidently he's a North Carolina kid.
He's a 5-star kid.
Yeah, North Carolina kid. He can scoot. He did a really good job. He
had Christian McCaffrey 2.0 out there.
Yeah, like he actually, when they put him in the lineup, he kind of stabilized their offense because he wasn't playing early in the year. He wasn't getting many snaps. And then they kind of rolled him in and it kind of gave them a little life on offense. He's a really good player.
Yeah, I watched just a little bit of that game, enough that I looked that dude up because I was like, who is this guy?
Yeah.
I looked him up. Yeah, 5-star kid.
Yeah, he's done a really good job. Can catch the ball out of the backfield. You're right. The McCaffrey comparisons are going to be
they're coming
all over the place. But no, he's a good player. You know, the bowl season is funny. It's lost a little bit of its luster, but I still find myself watching these games when they get locked in. I watched Minnesota play against West Virginia. Some of the replay. Air Force played Louisville. I think they played
Saturday. They beat Louisville, yeah.
Yeah, but it was a good game. So it's still some value to it. It's still not what it was. And I know we're the old men on the yard where we wax poetic about the nostalgic meaning of bowl games. It's just different. Mm-hmm. So you just have to kind of get used to, hey, it's different. It's spring ball 1A. Yeah. You know, like a lot of young guys.
We said that, though. We're okay with that.
Yeah.
I was talking to a buddy of mine over at Ohio State, and, it was just – thinking about their bowl game coming up, both the receivers opt out, but no crying in their soup. Like, dude, wait till you see Marvin Harrison Jr. or whatever.
Oh,
like,
he can play.
Wait till you see the next group of guys we got rolling through here. So they look at it as an exciting time to get these young guys their kind of first exposure.
Yeah. I mean, if you really think about it, it's the first game of quote unquote 2022.
Yeah.
And if you treat it like that, like, hey, let's get it out there, get your feet wet. Then you have about 6 to 8 weeks. We get right back to spring ball. So you get a taste of what game actually looks like. Then we go right back to practicing and doing some of those things. And I think the good coaches understand how to use it. They don't make it more than what it is, even though my man from NC State, Dave Dorn, is over
here. He was hot. He was hot, man.
I mean, he is, but DJ.
What do you say the NCAA stands for, by the way? No clue at all. I think it was no clue at all.
Yeah, no clue at all. they claim the victory, so to give them like
he wanted double digit wins, I think.
Yeah, he wanted double digit wins. He did the trophy and all this other stuff. And I was like, man, in a COVID, a pandemic.
Yeah,
like you don't have
it's not, a good look.
It's not.
You just hate him because he's NC State.
Yeah, look, I don't have fond feelings for that team in red. So
understandable. All right, I want to kind of connect the dots here. What we were talking about, you just mentioned it a second ago about Clemson, still having a down year and getting 10 wins. I'm going to connect that to the NFL in just a moment. And also, we're going to talk about some of these top receivers in the draft class. Hit on that a little bit. And then we want to give our thoughts on John Madden, the legendary John Madden who just passed away. So we have all that coming your way right after this. All right, Buck, so you mentioned it, right? Clemson down year 10 wins. I was talking about this with the GM, not for one of these two teams, but was just referencing the teams that I had worked with. I'm talking about the Baltimore Ravens and the Philadelphia Eagles.
Mm-hmm.
I said, you know, it's hard to have a really bad year in those two organizations. Like when you look at Baltimore and all the guys that they've missed this whole year, and here they are, mm-hmm. they're still in the fight, mm-hmm. right? You look at Philly, this is a total rebuild year, right? This is, mm-hmm. you know, this is everybody's expecting them to win 4 or 5 games. At season ends today, they're in the playoffs. I think they have a very good shot at getting into the postseason. When my take on it was, when you have the organizational structure, and even though, like in Philadelphia, the head coach has changed, and in Baltimore, Harbaugh has been kind of that pillar, mm-hmm. that's stable there. But even before him, Billick had a nice run. There's just kind of this winning culture that's ingrained there. And they have the resources that they give you. They know what it looks like. They know what it feels like. They know how to work. And I'm like, it's when you build it up like that, it's again, it's even when everything goes against you, those down years, like Clemson, a down year for them mm-hmm. is 10 wins. For the Eagles and the Ravens, like a down year for them is maybe they squeak in the playoffs. Maybe they just missed the playoffs. Like these organizations don't go through these, you know, 2-14, 2-15 type seasons. It doesn't happen.
No, it doesn't happen. I think you spoke to it. It's not necessarily a thing. And I think where some people mess it up, they believe that the culture is set and established by the head coach. It's an organizational thing.
Yeah.
It's an organizational thing from top to bottom where everyone in the building, on the football operation side, on the business side, there's a level of expectations and standards that we always meet. And for the Baltimore Ravens, because I think the Baltimore Ravens' ability to be in a situation where they are fighting for a playoff is remarkable considering how they were wiped out in the preseason.
Yeah.
Running back room gone,
left tackle,
star players gone, both corners gone. Lamar Jackson has been kind of in and out with a bunch of different little things. And yet here they are still fighting. And I think some of that is DJ, like, I believe at the top, if you like, no excuses,
mm-hmm.
no explanations, like whatever it is, we expect to be there and let's figure mm-hmm. out a way to get it done. And if you're connected and if you also have stability, because I think the stability part that you mentioned hasn't been a lot of turnover in that building.
Throw Pittsburgh in there too, by the way. You know, Pittsburgh
too.
I just didn't work there, so I didn't reference it. But that's another one. They don't have terrible years. Doesn't happen.
No, the stability in terms of everybody in the building has been there for a long time. You know what the standard is. You know what it looks like. Maybe it helps when you have Lombardi somewhere down the hall, and look, your team has hoisted it recently, so you know what a championship team looks like. And you don't relent off of the kind of people that you want in the organization. Like, you know, we've talked about it. Like, everybody has these core values and the acronyms they use for the guys that they want. And you don't relent. And if you put the right people in place, good, bad, or indifferent in terms of their talent level, I'm a firm believer now that the football character might matter more than the talent.
Yeah,
you know, the football character in terms of, are you tough, hardworking, competitive? Is a team about commitment, accountability, and trust? You have like those six things kind of working within the team, and then individually, you have a chance. And I think you have to raise the bar. And I'll take it on my own situation and looking at the Jags, right?
Yeah.
So you know that I'm tight with the Jags, and I'm looking at their 10-year mark. It's some ridiculous record where they may be 41-122 over the last decade. And people can think about swapping out the head coach. Oh, you got to get a new head coach or whatever. Well, I mean, they've done that for a while. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Like, it has to be a thing where everything is unified from top to bottom, that everyone in the building understands the expectations and the standards. And it means on the business side, you expect to excel and succeed, regardless of the situation and circumstance. Like, there's standards that you expect everybody to meet. The way that you work on the football operation side, you have that same thing. The people that are cleaning the building, you expect them to work to a certain level. It is literally establishing a culture where you have championship expectations, and that championship expectation is over everything.
Yeah.
We always operate at that championship level, the way you look, the way you dress, the way you go out, the way you handle things, the way you interact with people. Like, everything is at a championship level. And I think those A-level organizations, they get that. College, pro, high school, I think it's all the same.
I was talking with Chris Long on his podcast the other day, and, you know, we were talking about kind of when you go through tough times, how do certain teams get through it while others don't? And he was talking about, I asked him, teams you played on, championship teams in New England, championship teams in Philadelphia. Who are the guys, like the knots in the rope, right? When you start sliding down the rope, who's the knot that stops the slide and doesn't let this thing get out of control? And when I asked him about that, he was like, oh, you know, New England, he rattled off like six names. He was like, obviously, Tom, you talk about McCourty, you talk about Slater, da da da. And then he goes to the Eagles. He's like, yeah, with myself, Malcolm, Fletch, like all these guys. And I thought, you know what? If you get asked that question as a team, who are the knots in your rope, and you don't immediately have four or five different names, bing, 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 come to mind, you're in trouble, man. Because the, as we've seen, especially with COVID, right? The adversity's coming. The adversity's coming for every team in the league. And you better have that core group of leaders. And I don't think it can be just one. I mean, some people say, oh, it's just got to be the quarterback. Nah, I think you got to have a handful. You've been on great teams, Buck, as a player and on the personnel side. I mean, does that ring true with you as it does with me? You got to have a handful of those dudes.
Absolutely. When I was a part of the 96 Packers team that eventually won the Super Bowl, you talk about the knots in the rope. And really, at the time, Brett Favre was the best player. He was in the middle of a three straight MVP run. But I can't say that he was the guy like that. You know what I'm saying? He was still trying to figure out how to play. He was super talented. That was the thing. But then you had Reggie White, who was there. You had Leroy Butler, who was there. You know, you had so many different people who could fill in and occupy some of those roles. At the time, we had Mark Muir and Keith Jackson, who are veteran leaders who could step in and say things when needed. Eugene Robinson was there, who could step in. And DJ, I do think you're right. It's almost like a council, a leadership council, or some would say the elders, that are able to be like, okay, here's where we have to go, guys. Like, here's where we are. And I also think is, you know, like, we talked about it, it's being able to be brutally honest about where we are and having a coach who I would say isn't a crybaby, but is built for it. Hey guys, here we are. We're sitting at 3-4. We're here in the situation. Hey, our quarterback is out. Our left tackle is out. We don't have any running backs, but here's how we're going to win. This is what we're going to do. And they don't blink.
Yeah.
I think that is really important, that they understand that in adverse situations, they don't cry. It's not the woe is me. It's, hey, guys, all right, this is what we have to do. And if they have to shift styles, if they have to change the way they play, if they have to do things different, hey, we're going to be a little more complimentary. We're going to run the ball a little more. We may drain the clock a little more on offense. It won't be go, go, go. I think great coaches and great organizations figure it out, and they have enough of those leaders. And I can't forget what Chris Peterson told us a long time ago when he came out, and he kind of talked about it. OKGs, our kind of guys.
Yeah.
Guys that are built the right way. And I think that's where we come in as scouts. We better make sure that the guys we're bringing into the building fit. And it has to be one of those things where the trust between the people amongst the front office, that when the scout says, coach, this dude is real talented, but he's not
us.
Not one of our guys.
Yep.
And he'll be, all right, on to the next.
Yep.
Because the thing that breaks it down is when you start making those exceptions, but maybe we can, then you bring them in. And then when it hits the fan, they fall apart.
Yeah.
And so I think those great organizations have a clear vision for the kind of guys that fit into the program, and they don't relent off of that.
Yeah. And I think, you know, if you're going to even boil it down even further from a team building standpoint, we talk about kind of like the championship foundation. We've done that a bunch, that what you need from a, you know, position player standpoint. I think having one of those guys in every position room should be the ultimate goal. You've got one of those leaders, one of those knots in the rope in every single position room. And when things go bad, they can get the group together and kind of stop the slide, because I think that's what we're seeing this year in terms of the playoffs. That, you know, the teams that are going to make it to the playoffs, every single one of them has had to battle through something this year with all that's gone on with injuries and COVID. And I think that those teams that are kind of left standing are going to have a chance to fight it out for a championship. I think you can look at the knots in the rope and say that's a big reason why.
Yeah, that is a big reason why. And DJ, I would say my preference would be that the guys who eventually emerge as the knots in the rope are homegrown guys. Yeah. Guys that have grown up within the organization, and that the organization, if we've been there long enough, that is one of those things that's always passed down. So last night we did the thing, Twitter Spaces, with Aaron Jones, which I thought was great.
Yeah.
And the reason why I asked him about like filling the standard in Green Bay, because having played there, it's one of those things when you walk in the building, DJ, they tell you real quickly, hey man, here's how we do things. Yeah. When you get on the field and, you know, like I remember in a preseason game, my second, third year there, somebody makes a play. It might have been Darius Hopp, makes a play. And, you know, like most guys are prone to do on defense, they go and they run and they celebrate and they do all this all by themselves.
Yeah.
And I remember Fritz Shermer in the meeting the next day saying, hey man, that's great. We don't do that here though. we don't do that here. Hey, we're the Packers. There's a certain way that we act. We're champions. We don't do that.
I love that.
And it's one of those things that DJ, like that was it. And you didn't see it from anybody, but it was that moment like, oh, okay, yeah, hey, get the ball to the ref, jump in the crowd. Yeah, that's what it is. And so if you look at the Packers, even now, when they score, they either go do the Lambeau leap or they're with the teammates, because it has been passed down that this is how we do it. This is the way they did it with Lombardi. This is the way that we operate here in Green Bay. And I think when you have that and you have the stability and the consistency where you have people in the building for a long time, that's what you get. I would think that if I walked in the room in Baltimore, you'd be able to tell me like, yeah, we don't.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's it. That's it.
Hey, I'm just letting you know, we don't do that here.
I just think too, there's kind of like, if you're asking me about Baltimore, and this is not, you know, literally, but kind of figuratively, I would say the mindset has kind of always been, we don't start fights in Baltimore, but you bet your bottom dollar we end them. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like nobody backs down from anyone. Like that is not happening.
So I can tell you in Kansas City, I was there playing under Marty Schottenheimer. Gunther Cunningham was the defensive coordinator. In Kansas City, always kind of viewed themselves as that. Hey, man, we're rough and rugged. We don't back down. And we were practicing against the Minnesota Vikings. This is Randy Moss's rookie year.
Yeah.
And Dennis Green is on the other side. Like, hey, man, we're going to go at this tempo or whatever. And I remember him like, nah, we play at our tempo. we play at our tempo and we make people adjust. And I just, you know, when you hear it enough, particularly as a young guy, you're like, hey, man, this is what we do.
Yeah.
And, you know, you talk about those epic games. I remember you talk about Baltimore, but I remember Tennessee, when Tennessee was known as the Tyrants. And they would go, and Lake Dawson's a friend of mine. He was working for the Titans then, and they were going against the Rams. And the Rams are still a little bit of the greatest show on turf, and they're running around, and they're scooping and skipping. And, you know, those joint practices can get a little testy.
Oh, yeah.
And they were like, oh, what? What is this? Hey. It's how we practice. And so
I remember this is kind of going to date us, because I think it was a fax that got sent, but we were doing joint practices with the what was then the Washington Redskins, right? It's a Washington football team. And so we're going to be practicing with them the next day, and I'm in the office, and it came across the fax or whatever. I don't know if it went to Billick's office or Ozzie's, but I was tasked, because I was right outside their office, to go give this to Rex. So I go down there to Rex Ryan, and I'm like, hey, Rex, this is kind of the rules or whatever for joint practice. The Washington sent this over. This is kind of like the guidelines of kind of what they want to do and what they don't want to see and all that kind of stuff. And he goes, nah, we'll do what we do. Thanks. Like, hey, don't shoot the messenger. I'm just delivering a message. That's it.
So here's what's funny, because I hear about this. The Indianapolis Colts have a great thing going now. And everybody tells me about Matt Eberflus and their defense. And if you watch the Colts practice, they are a team that are sticklers for two things. You're going to run to the ball. and you're going to run to the ball at max speed. If they see you slow down, if you change speed, if you get passed it by a teammate, that's considered a loaf. Mm-hmm. So you're going to see them run to the ball. The second thing they're going to do is when they get to the ball, they're going to punch it, they're going to poke it, they're going to rake it out or whatever. Yeah. Like, it's ingrained in their players. And so when they have these joint practices, you have these guys that are used to catching the ball and
running free. Yeah.
getting punched in the ribs and in the guts. And they're like, what is this? And they're like,
that's what we do.
What we do.
Yeah. I love it. I absolutely love it.
It's one of those things. But going back to your original thing, that's why teams don't fall off.
Yeah.
Because there's a set of standards that you never relent on.
Mm-hmm.
Organizationally, from a coaching standpoint, peer-to-peer, there is a code of conduct like that you expect. And there's subtle peer pressure from everybody mm-hmm. within the organization to live up to those standards. And so even when you're down, it doesn't matter. Some of those things don't change. And I think it takes a level of confidence from the organization from top to bottom to know that, hey, even now, we don't blink. We don't change off of this. We know that the way that we operate is going to lead to success because we've seen success and we'll figure it out. It may be a little down moment for us, but no, we're not going. And so.
No, it's interesting, man. All right. We're going to take a quick break, come back, talk about some of these top receivers in the upcoming draft class. All right, Buck, I've been working through these wideouts, man. And I think more so than ever, you know, it used to be on the board when you're in the draft room, kind of peek behind the curtain. You kind of had your receiver board. You kind of just had your outside receivers and your slot receivers. There's really only two columns. We've talked forever about building a basketball team. I think now it's the point where you almost got to have more. You might need to have three or four different columns of how you want to divide these guys up, because I have so many of these guys graded almost identically. It's just whatever you need, you know. You need the big guy, you need the explosive guy, you need the route runner. Like, to me, that's why I think you have to kind of chop these positions up now instead of just leaving them as wideouts.
Yeah, and I think what we've seen, and we've talked about the last few years, but I think it's fully come in earnest now. We've seen what happens with the explosion of 7-on-7 football and year-round training and those guys. DJ, there's so many skill guys at the wide receiver position that can play, that is one of those things where, I mean, if you don't want to take one in the first round, you definitely can find them in the second and third round, and you can find them throughout the draft, and they can come and make immediate contributions and those things. And yes, there's a bit of a transition, but I mean, we've seen so many of these young guys come and they are ready made to pop. Yeah. And so as you point to being able to differentiate, what do you like at the position? Do I want a big body guy that can go and be my red zone weapon? Do I want the beep beep speedster that can take the top off the coverage and make things happen? Do I want the refined route runner who can get open versus all coverages? Do I want the guy that can work in the slot and give me the Cole Beasley type stuff? Being able to categorize all of those things and then knowing on draft day, okay, where are we as a team and what do we need? Mm-hmm. And how does it fit into those things? I think now more than ever, we have to do it. And I think it changes our analysis after the draft, because a lot of times we're like, man, why would they take? But you don't understand what division is. Division A, we're going to go four wise. We're going to do a little more of this. We want to add more bubble screens and RPOs to the mix. And so we need guys that can do it with the ball in their hands. You know, it changes everything. But you're right. You're going to have a lot of guys on the draft board. We talk about the draft board goes horizontally, where you have the different positions, and then vertically. And I think you're going to look up at the board and be like, man, they're like 10 different receivers all with the same grade. Coach, how are we going to split this up? What do we want? And I think the communication now, you talk about the wide receivers, the communication now between scouts and coaches has to be on point, because you have to be able to know exactly what the coach desires as we're beginning to bring the players up in the meetings and kind of set them, okay, like, coach, you say we need a receiver. What kind do we need? Because if you need this, I'm going to go to this page. If you need this, I'm going to go to the other page in my notebook.
Mm-hmm. And so when I kind of look at this group, and these are kind of the big guys that I've looked at so far, and they're kind of grouped together here because the grades are very similar. You got the two from Ohio State, right? You got Wilson and Olave. You've got Jahan Dotson from Penn State, who's a really good player. Mm-hmm. You've got Jameson Williams, former Ohio State, who's been tearing it up in Alabama, big-time speed. You've got the two big guys, Drake London at USC, Treylon Burks at Arkansas. Treylon Burks on like 225 pounds. Drake London, 6'5". So they kind of are paired together. You got to sort those two guys out. And then we'll see if Mechie ends up, is it Mechie or Mechie? I don't know how you pronounce it, but at Alabama, if he ends up coming out, he got hurt. I believe it was his ACL.
Yeah.
He's really good when you watch him on tape, like really, really good. So when you're trying to rank these guys and you've got different skill sets, to me though, when I've gone through all of them, Garrett Wilson checked more boxes than anybody else at Ohio State. I love Olave. I think Garrett Wilson is a little stronger, a little tougher after the catch. This guy can get in and out of routes. He can do everything you want to do. And just from a professional standpoint, reminds me of, and talking to people at Ohio State, you get some of the same things just in terms of this similar feedback. You recall like what you heard about Justin Jefferson, right? This guy's a pro. This guy can do anything you want to do. This guy is ultra, ultra competitive, you know, all those same things. So I'm like, okay, well, this guy can do everything on the field. I've seen it. And then you match that up with what you get there. And I'm like, to me, he's the best one.
And that's what it is. It's funny because I told you, Jerry Sullivan is my guy, longtime wide receiver coach in the NFL. And he saw one of our shows one time I was on, and maybe I didn't have Justin Jefferson in the top five at the time, something like that.
Yeah.
And he says, he's like, hey, man, you're missing out.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, the guy has it all.
Yeah.
And he said, everyone's going to be excited about Chase. He said, but this guy has it. And DJ, the it thing is the ability to do it all.
Yeah.
Run routes, big playmaking ability, win versus all coverage. It doesn't matter if you single, double, whatever it is, he can find a way to consistently get open and give you the production that you want. Has that it factor where he can turn his game up, take it up a notch when you need it in critical situations. There are a lot of key components. And, you know, you talk about Garrett Wilson and Ohio State and what he's been able to do, because it's hard sometimes to determine when you got so many guys. Like, they had three guys that could really get down.
Yeah.
But it just appears that when they needed it, the ball kind of found his way to him.
I love Olave, too. I mean, Olave's a really good player. He reminds me a lot of Devontae Smith, like just similar type frame, get on top of coverage. He's got easy, smooth speed.
Scored a bunch of touchdowns.
Yeah.
I think he might have the school record touchdowns.
I think he does. And this kid, he's tough, too. He's tough. He's just not physically as strong. Like, that's just a little bit of the difference when you see those two guys after the catch. But he's going to be a really, really good player. Jahan Dotson is in that same conversation out of Penn State. I think he's got the best hands of any of these guys. You see him just attack the ball. Not going to be a 200-pound guy, but he's got outstanding hands and is a really good route runner, efficient. He's got juice. Like, those guys, to me, you kind of bunch them together. Jameson Williams is the take the top off, just ridiculous speed. You got to live with some drops. I don't know that he has supernatural hands, Buck, but the big plays are going to offset some of that stuff.
Yeah, and I think that's what you have to kind of have to live with. And I think it's really important because, DJ, God, I heard this. I can't remember who I heard from. Long time GM. Might have been Bill Polian talked about it. Guys are what they are, right? The guy that you see on tape, like, it's rare that they really change. If a guy has some issues with drops or whatever, like, that's part of what is on his background. And you kind of have to be able to understand it and have to explain that in the meetings. You have to be like, hey, he's going to drop some, but when he catches, he's going to score points.
Yeah.
And so we have to just kind of understand it and chalk it. Everyone can't freak out when it happens. It's just part of what they do. But for these guys, for me, the catch thing, and I don't know if you do, when you do the studying, if you do like catch percentages and you kind of track like the number of receptions to targets and drop percentages and all that other stuff. But
yeah,
you know, if you want sure-handed guys, they have to catch the ball consistently in college. It's just so hard to improve that skill. And there are things that you can do. We can get on the tennis ball and we can fire them off to them. We can catch the jugs machine and all that. But the natural pass catchers, and most, in my mind, most of the natural pass catchers also have big hands.
Yeah.
Because it becomes easy. When you look at Odell Beckham Jr., he just swallows them up. I think Ja'Marr Chase, when you watch Ja'Marr Chase catch the ball, he swallows them up with his hands. So it's great hand-eye coordination, but big hands, big mitts, and it just looks easy because they don't flinch. They don't get all bug-eyed. Like the left fielder circling under the ball, trying to figure out how to catch it. Like, nah, they just easily catch the ball and do those things. And so you have to understand what's the priority. What are you prioritizing when it comes to that position?
Yeah, you look at these two big guys, by the way. You know, you have kind of those aha moments where you're trying to figure out who this guy is and who he reminds you of, and then all of a sudden, like, boom, it just hits you, and you're like, oh, my gosh, that's it. I'm doing a Charger game a couple weeks back, and Mike Williams hovers up in the air and makes a play on a go ball down the field, and, like, I'm, like, paying attention to the game and calling, and all of a sudden, I was like, oh, Drake London, there you go, boom, Mike Williams, there you go, that's it, that's it, that's him, that's what he is. And not, you know, not going to get a ton of separation, but it doesn't matter. He's just so big and his ball skills are so good. The Colorado game for Drake London, if you want to have some fun, go watch some of the catches he makes in that game. Unbelievable. And I know, like, Mike Evans was kind of the first name that I jotted down. I think Mike might be a little bit more polished. Yeah. A little more quickness and burst kind of in and out. I don't think he's maybe that. But you'll see this year, Mike Williams is a free agent. He's going to get paid a bunch of money. Mike Williams is a really good player and has made a living making plays down the field. I think Drake London's going to do the same thing.
It's funny. You know, I coached against Drake London in high school. I was at Notre Dame. He was at Moore Park. We actually lost to him because, man, he caught a touchdown, maybe a two-point conversion where he just was too big. This is a guy that was a legitimate basketball player. I want to say he played maybe his first or second year at SC. So he can take it off the rim and alley-ooping and those things. I think the other thing that we have to do in the scouting equation, you got to scout your coaches, depending on who your wide receiver coach is. Because the one thing I would say for a guy like Drake London needs to learn how to speed cut everything so he doesn't have to stop start.
Yeah.
If he can learn and master the skill of kind of learning how to roll into his end cuts, how to kind of keep it on the move, that'll give him a chance to be a real complete player instead of just a guy that they just kind of throw down the sideline and use them in the red zone. And so if you have a receiver coach who is very familiar or understands how to coach big guys, man, that's when – because I think there's so much untapped potential that you can even get even more out of him, but he has to have the right guy that can kind of bring that out.
So comparing him with Treylon Burks, London, give him the edge playing above the rim, 50-50 balls. Treylon Burks, both of them are really good after the catch. Drake London will break a bunch of tackles. He's physical and tough. Treylon Burks has more kind of build speed after the catch. He's got a bunch of home runs. You see 91-yard touchdown, 85-yard touchdown. Like, Drake's not going to give you that side of it. So you get a little bit more run after catch with him. And there's the easy comparison with A.J. Brown just because you got a 6'3", 225-pound frame for this dude. And he's built like kind of that H-back, you know, kind of do it all guy, but he's a receiver who's built like an H-back is kind of what I'm getting at.
And I mean, and we're seeing creativity and we're seeing different ways that people are deploying.
Oh, you can put him in the backfield. Yeah.
Get him out and those things. And so it's making sure you have a plan to have enough creativity to make it work for him. But no, I like big guys. And I think it's funny, man, the game trends, it goes back and forth, big guys, little guys. I think you need to have enough diversity in your receiver core to kind of deal with that. I don't think you have too much of anything. Can't have too many little guys because then they get knocked around when the game gets kind of physical. They don't necessarily go over the middle. And then you can't have too many big guys because then you may not have enough speed to stretch the field vertically. So it has to
That's why these guys are going to be all over the board. Like when you look around the teams are going to have these wideouts in all different order. And I don't know if there's a wrong answer. I think all those guys I just mentioned are really good. And Mechie's really good too. So we'll see if he ends up coming out with his knee. And I've got a lot more guys to get to, but everybody in the league has kind of categorized it as those first guys, like the big six. Like those guys have kind of separated themselves. So those guys are really dug in and studied. And literally the only thing I can say definitively, I think my list comes out at the end of January. But I can say definitively for me at this time, I will put Garrett Wilson at the very top of the list.
No, nothing wrong with that. You just got to make it happen. You got to know exactly what you want. You got to know how to do it. And we have to have – it's going to be funny because I always have these top fives. I may have to have subcategories.
That's how you get away with it. Top five
speedsters, big guys, whatever. Because if you just have a straight top five list, it's going to be hard for people to understand, well, why don't you have this guy?
Oh,
I want to put him in there, but I don't like a big five.
Exactly. Give you a chance to get some more names. All right, before we get out of here, I think you definitely need to touch on what happened with the passing of John Madden. Did you ever get a chance to meet Coach, and did you ever have anything impactful from him that you took over the years?
No, I didn't get a chance to meet Coach, but I think his impact is everything, right? Is what he was as a coach. Obviously, I mean, a guy – Hall of Fame coach. You look at his winning percentage with the Raiders. It's everything. He was young. He's probably one of the first young Gunners to take over a job and do it. I want to say he was 32, 33 when he took over the Raiders job, won 100 games. I think his winning percentage is greater than that of Vince Lombardi, which is crazy when you think about it. And then you think about the Hall of Fame announcer and broadcaster that he turned into and how he and Pat Summerall, for me, kind of defined everything because I remember listening to them and that stuff. And then you take what he was able to do in the video game world and how that was exposure that so many of us.
And it was a gateway, gateway into football for
sure. Yeah, it gave everybody an opportunity to get around the game. And so his contributions, I don't know if they'll ever be matched, but his legacy is just how he opened it up for so many people to enjoy the game that you and I both love and adore.
So here's my biggest takeaway. I never got a chance to meet Coach, but I definitely think this is something that everybody can take from him, even if he didn't get a chance to meet him, but just followed his career, especially in what we get to do in the game of football. He was incredibly, obviously knew the game inside out, you know, as a Hall of Fame coach, but he never lost fact of that this is supposed to be fun. You know, if you if you listen to him call games, you'd learn something. It was insightful. Yes. He's, you know, the greatest analyst of all time. But he had fun. He could laugh. He didn't take himself too seriously, even with all he'd accomplished. You know, so to me, there's nothing that bugs me more than when if you're watching a game or watching analysis of people that take themselves and this sport way too serious. Yes, it's our job. Yes, it's our livelihood. It is a game. It is supposed to be fun. Do not lose sight of that.
That is. And I think what's so great about that, DJ, is how he's able to convey that. He talked about all the X's and O's and how, hey, man, it has to be this or whatever, but then never losing the fun part of it. And no. I think sometimes we can get so bogged down into everything, even in what we do. I mean, got to work, got to do this. Got to forget, man. Hey, it's fun. Let's have the fun part of it. Let's make sure we have enough fun that's an enjoyable experience for everybody involved because that's what the game is actually supposed to be about.
Yeah, I'm all for passion. Let's all be passionate. And with that comes frustration at times when you're fans, and I get all that. But, man, enjoy the fun times. Have fun with it. It's literally pinch yourself. We get to work and get paid to watch and talk about football. It's not a bad life, man.
No, it's definitely not a bad life. Nothing wrong with that. Can't beat that.
Yeah, well, thoughts and prayers there with Coach's family. What a life lived, though, and what a legacy he's left behind. And you mentioned it. I think that football game, you talk about having a legacy. That thing continues to carry on year after year. And it's really, like I mentioned, it's a gateway for all these young guys, young kids, boys and girls, to fall in love with the sport of football. So, you know, big shout out there to Coach Madden and a job well done, life well lived. Anything else you want to get out of here, Buck, before we wish everybody a happy new year and get rolling?
No, I just want to wish everyone a happy new year. Hopefully 2022 is even better than 2021. I look forward to partnering up with you again. New year, make sure we have a bunch of fun. And thanks for all the devoted podcast listeners. It's really, really great when we see the comments and stuff on social, the stuff that you guys see, the questions that you ask. Even if we can be even more interactive, like, let us know. Like, I think the game is always at its best when we're able to kind of pass on what we've learned and what we can learn from those on the outside. So let's keep it up.
Yeah. We did that Twitter Spaces last night with Aaron Jones and we got
really cool.
Yeah, it was fun. Really and cool. You know, I don't know if you'd noticed this, to pick this up, but got some feedback from folks inside the network. And one of the things that they said in there was you guys just have such good chemistry and you guys seem to enjoy each other and it makes an enjoyable experience. So I know it's not Thanksgiving. We do all that stuff at Thanksgiving. But another year, Buck, we've got to do this show together. You know, we go from knowing each other as scouts for all those years. And if you'd have told us back then, we'd be racking up year after year after year of somehow convincing them to pay us where we could have the same conversations that we'd be having if we were sitting at San Jose State watching tape, you know, getting to do that with you each and every year. Another one in the books. And here's to many, many more, my friend.
Hey, man, thanks so much, DJ. It's great, man. I look forward to kind of taking it to another level. I think about so many things that we haven't even scratched the surface on in terms of what we can do, and I'm looking forward to sharing those experiences with you and with the Mood 6 team.
Wow. Appreciate it. Appreciate Nabil as well. He's the best in the business from the producing standpoint. And we'll catch you guys in the new year. Enjoy the playoff games. Enjoy this NFL weekend. We'll talk about it all next week right here on Move the Sticks.